Warning. The Foundation database is classified. Unauthorized access will result in detainment. Within this archive, you'll find the procedures, descriptions, and accounts of the most notorious anomalies we've encountered to date. Secure, contain, protect.
Hey everyone, it's Pacific. I'm back with yet another wonderful interview. This time I'm talking to the incredible Karim Kronfi. Now, there is so much to know about you, but I think it's best if we hear it from you. So, Karim, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Oh, crikey. where do I start? Let's see. I'm in my early 50s. I've been acting since I was four. I am an IT and information security specialist as my day job, and I love audio drama. But I've been a performer most of my life, doing everything from fire-breathing, juggling, acting stage, a little bit of acting screen, but not a huge amount. And a lot of role-playing. I've done a lot of role-playing in my time as well.
Awesome. I dig it. Now, like I said, you've been in a ton of audio dramas, and I do want to dive into that. But first, you know, we're all in quarantine. We're, you know, stuck inside. What are you doing in your, in what little spare time, you know, you have between everything else?
Spare time. I'm a man with a successful wife and a six-year-old son trying to educate and keep my full-time day job running at the same time. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Right. Okay. Seriously, acting is my second career, and that sucks up most of my spare time. But I play computer games. I like a good adventure story with a strong story element. Quantic Dream stuff I absolutely adore. I've literally just finished Detroit Become Human on my first trip through.
Wonderful game.
I've started sort of diving down a couple of the other paths I messed up on to have see what the other bits are. I nearly cried when I first played through Heavy Rain. It got me so badly, that one did. That was such a good one.
Oh my god, yes, Heavy Rain. I think I was still in high school when that came out. Not to date myself.
So yeah, I love computer games with good strong stories and stuff. And as I said, sort of other pre-COVID times, I did a lot of role playing. Live role playing being my preferred form at the moment. We've got a
fair and we're talking tabletop.
Well, I used to do a lot of tabletop. I used to go to Gen Con in the UK. I never managed to get to the US one, sadly. Even though trying many times, and I came second in the open to actually to get my ticket to the US. But these things are as I can do. I'm not bitter. but yeah, I do a lot of live role playing.
Awesome.
We have a strong freeform gaming culture here in the UK, a group called UK Freeforms. We do theatre style live role playing, heavily plotted, intricate character sheets where depending on how long the game is, the games can be anything from an hour to an entire weekend. And an entire weekend game takes like a year or 2 years to write because it's like 70 characters typically for a big one.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
awesome.
We have one of those a year. And I've done a lot of those and I've helped ref a few of them as well. And I used to ref a lot of role playing as well. I love doing that. So those are the kind of things I used to do before COVID.
Right.
Time.
Heck yeah. So you mentioned that you've been acting and you've been a performer for almost your entire life.
Yeah.
But when did you like really first get into acting? Was it, back in like elementary or like middle school or I guess high school? Yeah.
School plays in primary school. My first review was the headmaster turning to my mother who was sitting next to him at the time saying, "Your son's a natural, Mrs. Cronfley."
Awesome.
And I I just always seem to have a knack of it for it. And as I grew older, I loved listening to comedy albums and radio dramas and comedies such as The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yep.
Doing voices, learning comedy sketches and speeches. I describe it as I fix computers to pay the bills, but I live to act. That's the
absolutely. So you again, I also mentioned you've been in a ton of audio dramas.
Yeah, quite a long list.
Oh yeah, I think the first big role I heard you in, or at least this is when I was like really getting into audio dramas, was What's the Frequency, which is one of my favorites.
Ah yes.
And in that you Walter, right? Walter Troubles.
Walter Troubles Mix, yes.
Yes.
One might say one of the lead characters, yes.
How would you describe that role? Like?
Best way to describe Walter is a supremely confident, contrarian detective with his fantastic sidekick.
Absolutely.
Whose name I've completely forgotten, but played by the magnificent Tanya Milojevic.
Another interview I actually have lined up right after you, tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. Wit. Wit's the character name.
Yes, Wit. Yeah, absolutely wonderful show. And of course, you know, you take that very strong character and then you slam him into this world of psychedelic noir and strange radio shows and typewriters and so much more. But what else have you worked on?
It's a long list.
Well, give me some highlights.
Okay, well, obviously the SCP archives.
Of course.
I've done quite a few for you now. Is it about six?
Yeah, you've done...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Or at least there's 9 sets of files in my archive, so there you go.
Right, and I think there's generally like 2 or 3 scripts in each of those.
Yeah, so the SCP archives, one of my favorite roles is Bruce Mercer in the Scottish podcast. A titular, charming bad guy. I tend to get a lot of those. I think it's the British accent that gives that away.
Oh, absolutely.
I've been in the Magnus archives, and my character got a lot of fan time from the rampant yeah. Magnus archives fans. They do seem to like Simon Fairchild rather a lot.
He's a wonderful character.
That's so much fun playing him. I drove off to the studio when we recorded it last year, and we had a great. I mean, I was only up to like episode 20 myself on my listening of the archives at the time, and so I hadn't even got into the extra layers of the show. I just thought this is fantastic, sort of. Anthology horror series. Because I walk late at night to keep myself relatively fit. I'm terrible fit at the moment, but I like walking late at night. And so I'd listen to this whilst I was walking. So that's really, I was really enjoying those things.
Yeah.
And so Alexander, it gave me a sort of half hour précis of what's going on in the universe, etc., and to prep me up to go into that particular episode, because that was 151. Simon's big picture is the episode. And then we just rolled with it after that, and that was good fun to record that one. And then other ones I've loved doing. I've done a few for Fallen Scholar, Liberty, Vigilance, and I've done I opened season 2 of Tales from the Tower.
Yes,
with Excuse Me. It was Travis and Caitlin. They're lovely, but Travis got hold of me quite a few years ago now. It was when he said, "Kareem, we've been let down. Could you record a show for me in the next couple of weeks?" I said, "Yeah, sure, fine. Yeah, send me the script." Yeah, so I was just starting to break in at the time. People started hearing about what I could do, etc. And so I got the script and looked at the script and thought, how many pages in 2 weeks? This was a 2-hour show where my voice was the primary voice, but
right,
practically the entire script was me.
Oh yeah.
And
it's an incredible episode too.
Oh, 2 episodes, remember, it's split into 2.
Yeah, you're right, it is 2 episodes.
I had to record this in 2 weeks with a full-time job. So I thankfully work quite close to home. So I was dashing home at lunchtime to get like half an hour recorded at lunchtime. I was doing late nights from like 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. I managed to get it squeezed in those 2 weeks, and I loved it. It was a really good episode. I really enjoyed it. Travis did such a fantastic job with the production, etc. I was just smacked.
Absolutely incredible. That's a fun little crossover that I didn't actually realize we had. But the first audio drama I worked on before I launched my own Lake Clarity, of course, was writing 3 episodes for season 2 of Tales from the Tower.
Ah, excellent.
I think I'd sent Travis just a really like brief script of Lake Clarity, like the first episode. It had like a bunch of stuff that we cut from the show, like a dream journal and whatnot. And then he had me come back and I think edit 2 of those and 1 other story alongside him. I think that kind of speaks to how small and intimate, you know, the audio drama community is. You know, once you know one person, you kind of know everyone, you know, either like directly or, you know, kind of through proxy.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose the big thing that brought us together, I suppose, was the audio drama production podcast way back in the midst of ancient time.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the Facebook group that spun out of it. And yeah, we all sort of found a place where we could all hang.
Right.
And it is. I mean, it's grown spectacularly over the last few years. I mean, now that I'm an admin on the group, the Audio Drama Hub page on Facebook, as it is now, we bust 3,500 members not so long ago.
Yep.
And you know, several every day coming in.
Oh, definitely. And it is, I would say, probably the best resource for any creator who wants to get started in audio drama. Like, go to Facebook, go to the Audio Drama Hub, and like there you can find everything you need, like from low end to higher end microphones and like equipment, or you know, just advice of like, how do I get started? And again, it is where I went when, you know, I first got started. It's like, oh, here's just this giant library of amazing, talented people to just, you know, guide you through whatever you want to do. Absolutely wonderful. So, again, many, many audio dramas. Do you have a particular role that stands out amongst them? You know, Simon from the Magnus Archives is a big one. I know a lot of people absolutely love you in 3001, A Red Reality from SCP, in which you get torn apart.
I mean, 3001 is Red Reality is one that blew my mind away, because the story behind that one was we were about to extend my house, so I recorded this last summer. So I'd moved from my back bedroom studio, because we moved my son into that room.
Mm-hmm.
And into his old room, but that old room was at the front of the house with a very bad window. So silent it wasn't, especially when cars were going past. So I basically recorded Red Reality, I think, over 2 or 3 nights, because it's a long one. It's another long one. Why do I get these really long ones?
It's that voice, you know, Karim. I always come back to your wonderful voice. Yeah, it's...
Appreciate the work, please. No, I'm not going to complain. But it was, I mean, you can imagine, anytime anybody drove past the bleeding window, it stopped me in my tracks trying to record, etc. And yeah, any noise was getting through. I basically ended up recording between 1 and 3 in the morning.
Right. And that's such an intense, you know, story as well. You know, you're sobbing and crying and screaming and, you know, banging your fist against the computer for most of the hour long episode. I mean,
basically, sort of, you know, just crying with tiredness come the end, yeah. which probably worked very well for the role, of course.
Oh, it's perfect. The final product was about an hour. I think you sent me like 4 or 5 files, I want to say, across those 2 or 3 days, because you broke it up by scenes, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And
3 copies of each one, you know.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you usually do a few takes at each jab.
6
files. 6 files. You probably sent me like what, almost 2.5 hours of audio that you know, trimmed it down, which is incredible and, you know, boggles me. But yeah, it's an intense role, to say the least.
Well, it's the thing about being a remote actor. Because I don't have anyone to work off of, I've got to, A, give you some variations on a theme.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have the safety recording as well. So I will typically give three times through doing the script. The first one is usually sort of my bedding in run through, and you can use that as sort of to fill in any zombie lines if all else fails. The second one's usually I'm getting the hang of it, and it's usually pretty good. And then the third one's where my acting chops really sort of finally kick in, and you'll probably get the best performance out of that, but you'll get some variations of key lines and stuff in amongst both of those. That's how it happens that way.
I think you and Tanya, you both generally give me two or three takes, and I want to say it's almost always like a mix of your second and third takes that like make it into the final episode. Yeah, wonderful stuff.
That's what we pretty much expect.
Yeah, right. But going back to the original question, is there a particular role that really stands out to you, either in challenge or in just like good old fashioned fun?
I've loved so many of the characters. I mean Walter is just class. He's such a great fun character to play. From What's the Frequency? I'll split this out a different way. One of the most challenging, other than Robert in 3001, was Tyler the Madman in Diary of a Madman Season 2.
Yes. Oh, my God. I almost forgot about Diary of a Madman.
Yeah, most people have, because it wasn't terribly well promoted, sadly. But thankfully, Dohai, the writer, is now pushing it on his website again. So it's almost getting a second release after Paul Sating decided to go mostly book and keeping stuff behind his Patreon and stuff. But yeah, I mean, Tyler is a nasty piece of work.
He is.
And the thing is, I had to record that straight after doing Tales from the Tower. Mm-hmm. So and he wanted that in 2 weeks as well. So once again, and that's a 17 episode series.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was a full season you did. Almost entirely.
And it's
your
only
voice?
My voice 99.99% of the time. Again, by the end of recording Mad Men 2, my throat had gone. I got some kind of bacterial infection. I was croaking out near the end.
Yeah.
Because I did do a slightly gruff London accent for Tyler, and I was gargling with mouthwash and all kinds of this just to keep my throat functional, and then at the end I had to get some antibiotics to sort of clear my throat up. There.
Oh boy!
But that was 4 weeks of intense work trying to get that. And then Paul then took 18 months to release the show, which was quite sad. But
of course,
this out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I could have taken a little more time, rest. That does actually bring me into something I did want to talk about with you, mm-hmm. because you do take on a lot of these really big roles, and you have such an iconic voice, but what is it like voice acting? What kind of hardships and issues do you face? And how does it affect you physically and maybe even mentally? I know that's like a 10-part question.
There's a question. No. I've been around a long time. I've been acting forever. I have done 40 plus productions on stage. I've directed 5. Mentally, it's voice acting is somewhat easier than stage acting in that respect, because you're not having to spend hours and months and weeks learning a script and getting so under the skin of a character, it doesn't stay with you that long necessarily, because you're on to the next script the next day or the next week or whatever, etc., etc. So something like Tyler, whilst I sort of had to live it whilst I was behind the mic for those fairly intense 2 weeks, I could, at the end of it, it's like, fine, I'm done. I can do something nice and fluffy after that. Physically, you've got to take care of yourself. There's all kinds of things you learn how to do when you're doing voice acting specifically. Make sure you're fully hydrated, drink lots of water. If your throat does start going, you've got to take care of yourself. You can't push through illness because you're just going to do more damage. It's like last year I had a horrendous throat infection that took me out for like 3 weeks. I could barely talk, which somewhat scuppered my production schedule and a whole bunch of stuff, but I kept in touch with the various producers I was working for. And also if it's a nice meaty role, it's physically tiring because on stage, yes, you're bouncing around the stage and doing all the physical stuff, but you're pushing that energy out to an audience, and they're in front of you, and then you've got to reach that to the back. When you're doing voice work, you've got to take all that energy and focus it in the square inch of the microphone in front of you. And it's got to still seem real, and it's got to still feel and carry all that emotion whilst you're making sure you don't peek over the top and blow through the recording levels and everything else like that. So it's still physical, because, of course, if you're embodying a character that's different to you, you're going to change your physical shape to make the voice go. If it's a smaller character, you're going to start in nasally, or bigger characters and this kind of that. And occasionally you have to yell and those kind of stuff. I have to make sure the family's out the house when I do my yelling bits, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, so physically... It can be tiring, especially like I do. I tend to have to record late at night after my wife and son have gone to bed. I have got a new studio, mm-hmm. stroke bedroom, now that I've extended the house. But so it's better, but I'm still sort of... I may have to put a booth in here anywhere at some point when I can afford it. But that's the next phase. Yeah. Yeah, so affecting voice, if you don't look after it, it can affect your voice quite badly. As I said, after Tyler,
definitely,
making sure that lots of taking care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you were taught all the strange little concoctions you can make to kind of soothe your voice. I think the popular one when I was in college was lemon juice, vinegar, cayenne powder, and like honey.
Honey and lemon is a classic. Adding cayenne pepper is an interesting addition. I'll have to try that.
I think it was to clear the sinus. I want to preface, it's disgusting. Yeah, yeah. But I would carry around like a little a thermos just full of
maybe
it.
Maybe they should just go the whole hog and put some ghost chili in there as well. It'd be fine.
Yeah, there you go. Just really flush it out. Oh boy. So we talked about the hardest role. We talked about some of the toll of voice acting. Mm-hmm. But obviously you do it. It's fun and it's enjoyable. Mm. But part of it is, like you said, waiting those 18 months for the editor or the producer to push it out the door or publish it. And I guess my question here is, what's kind of the reward for you, obviously aside from like acting, because it's not immediate gratification. You don't hear the applause. It's any time between a week and a year and a half before mm-hmm. you have any reaction. How does that affect you?
I suppose I've got to the stage in my acting career that I know I can feel when I'm doing good work. And when I listen back to the recording I make, I can feel the emotion coming across when I'm listening. Before I send it off to the producer, I get the buzz from that. And then once I hear the finished product and you started adding all the additional layers of the music and the other actors and whatever, and you can even better feel all that. And it's almost like I get it over and over again, which is lovely.
Right. Interesting.
And you have the advantage of being able to listen back again if it's a favourite episode. Because the memory can fade for stage work, but you've definitely always got the episode of audio drama to listen back on.
Right. I have
a few of my shows that are my guilty pleasures to listen back to.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about your breadth of work, playing villains, playing madmen. Are there any roles you're kind of looking out for? Any roles you really want to do, or maybe even shows you're looking to be a part of someday?
The one show I would love to be in, but probably won't get the chance now, is Wooden Overcoats. They've got one season left. They haven't called me yet, so
now or never.
If there was a chance for Chapman's dad to turn up and I could be Chapman's dad, I would adore that. But
there you go. Yeah.
That I suppose is the one show I would love to be in. I've managed to sneak into a couple of my favorite shows, sort of minor characters here and there. I managed to sneak into Ars Paradoxica.
Yes.
For a really minor role. So I was grateful for that one. I honestly don't know. I think as far as kinds of roles, is it conceited to say anything good? I don't know. I like roles with high emotion. You know, it's I do this to feel. You know, I work in computers day in, day out. You know, don't get a lot of feeling when you're working with computers. You know, I do acting to express and feel and experience emotion from a different aspect, and that's what drives me. That's my drug, for want of a better phrase. You know,
absolutely.
Because I can't perform well. Because I'm a father, I haven't been able to perform in front of an audience for years, and that's one great thing that voice acting has given me, is a freedom to carry on performing without having to spend three evenings a week out at rehearsing for multiple weeks of a year.
Yeah.
And there's a whole new community I'm friends with now. You know, I go to the meetups in London when they were still going, and mm-hmm. hopefully we'll start them. We'll get to them again at some point in the future. And Pod UK and the lovely events we have here in the UK now. And so it's a lovely social thing, and you know, of course, meeting with all new producers around the world as well, working for so many different people, both in the US and in Europe and other places. It's fantastic. And yeah, I like turning my hand to whatever people want, because I can, whilst I won't say I can do everything, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, with my history of various characters, Starship Captain, Celestial Beings and Bad Guys being the old tagline, I auditioned for Kalila Stormfire's Economic Magic Services to play Clarence, mm-hmm. Twinner, a gay changeling.
Yeah.
And he's lovely. I adore him.
Yeah, he's a wonderful character. He's
one of the loveliest characters I absolutely adore. And he's completely against the type I've played till now, you know. I like that. I like an acting challenge. Give me something I can get my teeth into.
Right.
And I'll see if I can, you know, draw the blood of the red meat out, sort of thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, you kind of moved to voice acting after your son was born. Is that what pushed you into audio drama, into voice acting, or did the itch to do voice acting come before that?
Oh, no, I started doing voice acting before that.
Okay, gotcha.
But I went effectively exclusive when my son was born.
Mm-hmm.
I actually started taking my whole acting career, as in stage career and other things, a lot more seriously back in 2008. I'd been doing amateur for years, you know, two or three shows a year, that kind of thing. I'd spent 16 years as a performer with a medieval entertainment show, being the juggler, fire breather, actor in that. But I just got, not bored of amateur theatre, but I wasn't getting challenged.
Yeah.
You know, my physicality, I'm quite a big chap, although mm-hmm. my weight has yo-yoed over the years. I used to be extremely fit, ran a marathon and other things, but I've always had a problem with my weight. So stage acting, whilst I have the talent, you get problems. And amateur directors don't necessarily entirely have all the skills you might need when you get to a certain acting level.
Right.
So a friend of mine on one of the shows we were doing suggested I go get trained to direct. So I went to City Lit in London, which is an adult education institution, and they did evening classes on directing different plays, and I did that, and I learnt a huge amount, you know, how to get under the script, working with other people, seeing what other people's inspirations were, finding my own voice as a director. And also through that, I really increased my chops as an actor immensely.
Oh yeah.
And I did a year's worth of evening classes, two semesters 1 year, and then I did the third semester, which they opened up the following year. And I also acted as an actor for the first two classes of the following year as well. So I did whole, you know, basically spent 2 years doing all kinds of stuff with that.
Right.
And that lifted my acting level up, and it turned me into a director as well. And it freed me as a performer, and I loved working, going to City Lit so much. They also did an acting for radio course, so I did that, and I worked at a radio station at the time. I worked for British Forces Broadcasting, and I was doing little bits and pieces for them, because, as you know, my voice, people were saying, we really ought to use your voice on the radio.
Absolutely.
So I did like comedy skits and quizzes and this kind of stuff for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, well, I joined some casting sites and I just moved to doing more voice work, and you know, hoping I'd make some money at it as well, because, you know, who can ever do with any more money? Of course, there's not a lot of money in audio drama. I accept that fact. But it's a lovely avenue to express my need to act, my talent, to give it free rein, to do more and different work, you know, because behind the microphone, nobody knows what you look like. I can be playing God, a lizard man, or a gay changeling. It doesn't
Absolutely.
So I do want to dive a little bit more into, you know, you as mm-hmm. Karim and who you are, but before we do that, I'd love to pick your brain about audio drama. Obviously, it's an industry that is rapidly growing and changing.
Yeah.
What is the next big thing you would like to see in audio drama?
Oh, crikey. I honestly don't know. Well, the next big thing I'm waiting for is, what's the Frequency season 2?
Absolutely. Coming soon, I believe.
James is writing like
yes.
crazy. I mean, life in the arts is always fun.
Yeah.
The stock phrase is, I have a number of projects at various stages of development. A couple of my really big roles got scuppered by producers going through divorces and other things, and life being generally thrown on the rails, which is really annoying when you get into a really nice role and it's like, oh, bother. Another one is Mindfire. I finally got to my first big episode, and then production stopped on that one. It's like, bother.
Right. Definitely.
But yeah, so yeah, if Mindfire comes back, that'd be lovely. What's Frequency season 2? Looking forward to it. James and I had some chats about things, because there's some fairly heavy stuff at the end.
Oh, anything you can divulge?
Well, if you've listened to the end of season 1, there's a fairly intense end of season incident.
Yes, indeed.
I sort of insisted needed some payoff in season 2. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we do with that one.
Absolutely.
Other than that, I'm just, I suppose the one thing I'm looking to try and encourage this year, it's been brought into sharp focus by the whole Black Lives Matter movement recently, is I am, of course, a person of colour, technically. I'm an Arab.
Yeah.
This voice does not sound Arabic.
Right.
I don't necessarily look Arabic. I look Italian or something else, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I, whilst I have experienced racism when I was growing up, and people who knew my name at school and this kind of stuff, I don't see it on a day-to-day basis, but I'm very much a person of colour to a certain extent, and very much so. And the one thing I and other people in the UK community, certainly, because we fully appreciate the UK community is very much very pale,
yeah,
is
yeah.
getting different voices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping to put together a little project with the Audio Drama Hub, and with Ella Watts, who is one energetic dynamo on the UK scene.
Absolutely wonderful. Yes.
We've been talking about doing some kind of project to encourage more people of colour into the community, getting those different voices as writers, producers, actors, etc. So that's something I'm trying to get pulled together.
Absolutely.
Probably in the near future.
Good. That sounds absolutely wonderful, and I'm excited to hear more about that.
Mm.
So I guess that does actually lead me to my next question is, you know, you have some training as a director. Are you interested in directing audio dramas or maybe writing your own someday?
Directing, love it. I've done a few. Writing, I do not have the personal mental qualities to write, sadly. I can write, but it takes me 9,000 times longer than anyone else. I don't have the discipline.
Totally.
It was a pain, problem in school. I am dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst for me it affects me in different ways to other people, I can read perfectly well. I discovered I was dyslexic when I was 32.
Yeah.
Or more precisely, my wife, my girlfriend at the time, prodded me to say, "You really ought to get tested." Right. And so I did. This explains a lot how I've been coping with my life up until now. So, writing for me is a challenge. I can never focus my mind in that.
Yeah.
The one thing I've learned over the years is writers need to write. Like, as an actor, I need to act.
Absolutely.
I don't need to write.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the thing. But directing, I adore. Having done the training, I love it. I think I'm quite a sympathetic director. I get pretty good performances out of my actors. acted with all kinds and been directed by all kinds of people, and having gone through my training and learned a few of the key techniques and finding my voice, I enjoy taking an actor and lifting up their performance to the level we need, or allowing them to find the best voice they can to deliver their performance, if that's the best way.
Right.
If that's a good way of putting it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you don't tell someone how to act. You give them the tools and the space to give them their performance is the best way to describe it, I suppose.
I love it. That's absolutely great. I am obviously a big fan of you and your incredible tool set and skills.
I'm going to blush now. Do you understand?
I think I touched on this a little bit earlier, but when I was first getting my start in audio drama, I came across you and we worked on, oh God, Karim, what was the first project we worked on together? Voices of the Abyss.
Oh God.
It's been a few years.
It has. I've done so many. I'm sorry.
Right.
I mean, I use Podchaser to track my work. And it's like I'm over 120 episodes.
Oh, it's insane.
I've done quite a few, and I've done some professional work in there as well. I say professional, it's all professional. Significant paid work. I've worked for Audible,
right.
Wireless Theatre, on a couple of things. I could try and look back, but it's been a while.
Oh, definitely.
I'll look in my script repository because I did have a Pacific folder. Let me have a look.
I want to say it was definitely something I worked on while I was still in college. I just don't know what. I feel like it was voices, but it might have been something before that.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, in audio drama, it's like, I know I met you at some point, and then at some point I was like, hey, here's a script, and it all blurs together.
I can't remember, I'll be honest, but heck.
That's
It's been a fun ride for everything we've done, and getting me involved in SCP was weird. Of course, getting me to play that French plague doctor was a real fun one to get me on set.
I was talking to T-Sat, who is, he's one of our... what's the word for him? He's one of our Discord moderators. He is also a moderator for the SCP Wiki. So, he's kind of my go-to person for everything SCP. Because, there's 10,000 articles, There's too much for me to skim. And he knows all of them, just because he's magical like that. And I want to say he said he's seen 20, 30, maybe even upwards of 50 different takes on 049. It's one of those characters that is incredibly iconic, and I'm biased, but I like your version the best, and Don't tell anyone else, but so does T-Sat. but yeah, like I said, I do want to dive in a little bit more into you as a human and as a being.
Sure.
Yeah.
Crazy happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned that, you know, you play some games in your free time. You work a real, well, I shouldn't say a real job. You work another job. What do you do in life outside of acting?
IT and data security.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I always come across in audio dramas. Almost all of us have other jobs, you know, whether it's students or retail workers or teachers or IT and data security.
It doesn't pay the bills, sadly. That's the problem. The sad thing about podcast audio drama is because we're all handing the same £10 note around, as I believe Matthew McLean said on an early episode of the Audio Drama Production Podcast. But it's growing, you know, with more patrons and more Kickstarters and whatever. It's growing.
Yeah.
It's nothing I can live on at the moment.
Right. But hopefully someday.
Acting is voice artist is a profession that's flooded with anybody who thinks they can do it with a microphone.
Absolutely.
And with the advent of AI voices now coming in, a lot of that work's going to disappear as well. So it's the kind of thing that I was planning, I still may sort of rotate out of IT in my retirement to be a full-time retired actor. As a retiree to be a full-time actor kind of thing. Whether I have the entrepreneurial skills to make myself a full-time sort of VO, we'll have to see when the time comes.
Sure.
I mean, the one thing is, you know, working in IT and data security, I get paid very well. So it's not something I can put away, especially since I've just extended the house and taken on a mortgage that's immense. So,
but still, we'll leave you with some time later. That's awesome. You're an artist, and as an artist, you know, I imagine you consume a lot of art. Any audio dramas out there that you're a big fan of, outside of the ones you've worked on and kind of made your way into?
Oh, the ones I've trying to look at my phone now, see which ones I've got in there.
The list is ever growing, I feel.
Yeah. I've really liked Ithurin.
Yes.
It's a new take. It's a very dark fantasy, very dark. But I like its grit.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. I adore Boom. It's a modern actual drama rather than being sci-fi or fantasy or anything else. It's nice having a contemporary modern drama.
Definitely.
Ooh, Bronzeville, I was blown away by, but then it was a
Bronzeville's very good.
A piece of American history I wasn't aware of and thought it was, once again, those other voices getting heard, I thought was the thing.
Right.
What else? So many things.
Yeah, tons of them.
You may have to edit out some of this pausing whilst I'm trying to look through. I mean, I've been in the Amelia Project, but I love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Amelia, wonderful folks. Cool. What else do you enjoy watching? TV shows, movies out there?
It's quite interesting. I don't get to watch a lot.
Because
my wife has an attention span that's quite short nowadays. Because she's now in quite a high-powered job, and she's a PhD in history, but she's doing. Mm-hmm. She was working in the academic field and all kinds of other bits and pieces. She's now working at the National Archives in the UK. So her mental space, especially with everything that's going on, she can pretty much.
Right.
She likes reading books and she likes fluffy murder. So we watch a lot of the fluffier murder type things here in the UK. So things like Midsummer Murders and that kind of thing. The one show we both adore is Endeavour.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the latest in the Inspector Morse saga, where it's back when he was first entered the police. That's a show we absolutely love together. I love sci-fi of various kinds. I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan, so I occasionally mm-hmm. I rewatch it every now and then.
Heck yeah.
I'm partway through season one of Picard, finding that quite interesting. I've got so many on my to-watch list, it's huge, but with, you know, watching the stuff with my wife and having a lot of voice work to do after that, I don't get a lot of time now. It's like, if I want to watch anything, I tend to either lose sleep or not get my voice work done. So it's
right. I'm risking a compromise somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I love sci-fi, I love fantasy. I adored The Witcher. I really enjoyed The Witcher.
Yes. Season two is starting production in August, I believe.
Good. It's a little sexually gratuitous, I'll be honest. I suppose when you go with the games and the books, it's probably the way. But you know, I'm kidding. I'm becoming a real fuddy-duddy in my old age. Sorry, I'm not old, but I'm certainly middle-aged. I loved it. I mean, Henry Cavill did a fantastic performance, as did so many of the other cast.
Yeah.
I've actually still got to watch the last season of Game of Thrones. That's I've got the DVDs on my shelf waiting to watch it. I just haven't got around to doing it yet. So annoying. I've so much, and I'm about three films behind on the MCU. I'm partway through Ant-Man and the Wasp. It used to be my wife and I used to watch it both together. Mm-hmm. But once again, since her attention span went, it's like I have to try and find the time with the previous caveats to watch a whole movie. That's hard.
Yeah.
Because my son is a bit too young to watch the Marvel MCU at the moment. Yeah. He enjoys the Lego version of Star Wars at the moment. And so I can enjoy that for all the in-jokes. There's so much stuff. Other media, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of factual podcasts.
Oh yeah.
Sadly, I'm an absolute. I'm not a football nut, but my team, Tottenham Hotspur, I've loved since I was like six.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to a lot of the football podcasts, which have been interesting in the last few months, whilst there hasn't been any on.
Right.
They've been interviewing old players and stuff like that. And I managed to go to the new stadium last year, and it's a fantastic experience, etc. I keep up on, I have to keep up on my information security stuff, so I listen to a lot of podcasts about information security and IT, because that's just, I can't, I spend so much time reading at work, I might as well listen to stuff to keep up to date. And audio dramas, that's too many to count.
One every day too.
Yeah, basically. And there are so many coming out now as well.
Right.
It's just blowing me away how many. I mean, I'm looking to try. I think I'm going to try and see if I can find more Australian podcasts, etc. Fable and Folly, Canada. I love Alba Salix and Axe and Crown I appeared in, but I love that whole series. That's so much fun. I'm hoping more contemporary drama comes out. We had some great contemporary ones out of the Wondery stable before Wondery decided to stop doing audio drama, sadly. But they did produce some fantastic work with some real top-notch actors in there as well, Stacey Keach and stuff like that. So that's a shame. Lovely, lovely work from them. So much stuff. So yeah. Otherwise, my film watching is a lot of stuff suitable for 6-year-old boys.
that makes sense. Awesome. Well, I think that about wraps up all the questions that I have for you today. But is there anything else you'd like to share with us in these closing moments?
Oh,
I know the open-ended questions are always the hardest.
Yeah. Right? No, I suppose to the listeners out there, thank you. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be able to do this. And to all the producers and the editors and the musicians and music directors, thank you too. Because I may complain about the 3 or 4 hours I have to do to put in a long show. But then, when it takes an hour per minute to produce an audio drama after that, you know, my work pales into insignificance. So I don't even begin to register on that kind of stuff. So I just want to say thank you to the rest of the community, everyone else who gets their kicks doing the other stuff that allows me to sound good, you know. I do what I can to justify their work, I think is the best way to put it. If I put my bit in and I make the effort and I do the best I can, then that gives them the platform to do their best work as well, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't put it better myself.
One of the loveliest things I had on a couple of shows is, because I do accents, I do different voices, etc., etc., is occasionally I'll pop on to, you know, people on Twitter say, I think this was Kareem. Let's just check the cast list. Oh, it is.
A little bit of a Where's Waldo in podcasting.
Yeah. Yes. And it's either Sarah Golding or me half the time. So, you know.
I think I'll leave us on one final question, and that is,
sure.
What's your favorite accent to do?
Oh, crikey.
Or even character voice. I'd take a character voice too.
Tricky. I try to give each character something unique, be it regional or, you know, of course, the traits of the character inform the voice to a certain extent as well. The occasional time where I get to use mostly my own voice, basically being Bruce, for example, is nice. I don't have to work quite so hard to act through the accent, because that's always key. But I love playing Clarence Twiller. He's once again, he's so against type. It's lovely. I suppose one of my strongest distinct accents that I really enjoyed doing was in one of the 11th Hour shows I directed, Ivory Towers, written by the fantastic Richard Brooks. Mm-hmm. I got to play this Oxford Don who was from the north. So I did a fair Yorkshire accent. I really enjoyed that one. It really sort of got under the skin of that one. Because thankfully we were all actually in a studio for that one at the Radio Theatre Workshop to record that. That was good fun. And I really, I like it when I can really get under the skin of an accent and actually really, really put it to its best. That was one of my favorites, yeah.
I dig it. Well, Kareem, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and answer all the questions that people send in. Just as a reminder, if you have your own questions, please send them in to contact@midnightdisease.net. And yeah, we'll be back very soon with more episodes, and next week with one more wonderful interview. All right. Thanks, Kareem.
Cheers, Pacific. Take care.
My name is Pacific S. Obadiah. I'm your showrunner and sound designer. Our music is composed by the incredible Tom Rory Parsons and our producer is Tom Owen. This is a Bloody Disgusting podcast. For more information, visit bloody-disgusting.com.